Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast, the Left of Lansing podcast. I am Pat Johnston, ready to provide you with the most insightful, informative, and entertaining commentary, guests, predictions, and opinions when it comes to Michigan and national politics and sports and pop culture sometimes and whatever else comes to mind. Hope you guys had a great holiday season, and you know, I cannot believe that this is the 2025 version of the show, considering I started this around, 6 years ago. Of course, 2024, on a political and cultural level, was a bit of a drag, to say the least, right? But like many of you, I'm suspecting I needed the holiday break to regroup physically and mostly mentally after the election year, and especially after the disappointment that Michigan Democrats brought many people during the lame duck session in the state legislature. And I'll talk about that in a second. But I returned earlier this week with my first Monday musing of the year to kind of get back into the swing of things, and it felt really good. And let that be a reminder that in addition to the weekly podcasts that are released each and every Thursday morning, I provide my Monday musings and my Friday shorts for those of you who subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, because one day a week, come on, let's admit it, isn't enough time for me to say all that I've got to say. Left of Lansing is also available on YouTube, so please subscribe there, because in addition to the regular show content, I'll be adding other content there as well that is not available just for those listening to the show via podcast form. And I will remind you that I'm now on Blue Sky. Just search Left of Lansing there and you will find me. It's where I'm doing most of my commentary nowadays, and it's a nice place to get away from the cesspool that is Elon Musk's Twitter. I do not call it X, it is always Twitter. I still have my profile up there on Twitter, and I'm still posting my audio and video clips there, but as far as commentary goes, I'm doing mostly all of that on Blue Sky. I'm still on Facebook and I'm still on the gram, but I'm not sure how much I'll be doing there with Zuckerberg's announcement this week that Facebook will be turning into Twitter. In fact, that's going to be one of the topics I talk about with my guest coming up here in a few moments. Jennifer Schulze is a longtime Chicago journalist who's been writing columns for the Heartland Signal, which covers Midwest news or news that's happening across the Midwest. And the people who work there have also posted some great news stories about Michigan politics as well. Jennifer posted a column at the Heartland Signal that came out just before the new year, and it was titled, Welcome to the United States of Elon. And we will talk about the rise of the billionaire tech bros and if the legacy media is really up to the task of covering the merger of President Musk and his sidekick Donald Trump. And then my Left of Lansing last call will provide some additional thoughts from my discussion with Jennifer Schulze. So that's all coming up here in a moment or two. I feel like, and I don't think I'm alone here, I feel like that things are really getting crazy out of control here already in 2025, and I will do my best to alert all of you on what's happening in the Great Lakes State as MAGA Republicans now have the majority in the state house. I will do my best to cover what's happening across the country and how it affects Michigan, since Dear Leader Trump is moving back into the White House and his dutiful and extreme MAGA Republicans own the majorities in both the House and the Senate, well, and the U.S. Supreme Court, too. I will try to bring you the best progressive thinkers, writers, communicators, influencers, officials, politicians, and activists to help let everyone know the many people out there fighting to make the political machine actually work for the people and not just for the out-of-touch elitists out there who now own some powerful positions with Trump back in the White House. I will continue to spotlight how MAGA Republicans are working to divide the working class for the benefit of the elite class, their class, the untouchable donor class. I'll continue to spotlight how MAGA Republicans are a threat to our democracy, to our American values, to the working class, to the migrant class, to women, to minorities, to the LGBTQ plus community, to all marginalized Americans, and to all people who weren't born with money or connections to lobby or bribe politicians to do their bidding. I will continue to use this show and my platform to spread progressive messages, strong progressive messages, which are popular with the people, but are suppressed big time by corporate media forces and, sadly, by some inside the Democratic Party. And I will continue to use this show to push the progressive economic and social agendas because they are intertwined. As we've seen with MAGA Republicanism, it's an ideology that's bent on suppressing real American history, suppressing marginalized people, and pushing a deceitful and hateful white Christian nationalist philosophy, which helps the goals of the rich white oligarchy that just sits back and enjoys how MAGA has divided the working class just enough for their benefit. Pursuing a progressive agenda, a strong progressive agenda, and pushing back against the blatant lies perpetrated by MAGA Republicans and their rich corporate management benefactors is how we can begin to not only bring some people back to our side, but also how we can bring the millions of those who did not vote last year. You know that only 47% of the city of Detroit voted last year? That's a problem. And it's a problem I want to address and learn why Democrats are having problems reaching Detroit voters and why Democrats are having a problem reaching all working class voters. This is the party of FDR. This is the party of JFK. This is the party of LBJ. This was always the working class party. What happened? We have to find ways to mend fences in different areas because many Arab American voters, Hispanic voters, and far too many white voters back Trump because for some reason or another, they believed his economic message rang true to them. Now, how are we letting that happen? Worse yet, how are Democrats letting that happen? So while I will spotlight how MAGA Republicans are working to hurt and punish the working class and marginalized Michiganders and Americans across the country, that also means I will spotlight when Democrats, either in Michigan or on the federal level, are doing the same by being MAGA Democrats. For example, I could not believe my eyes when I read that Michigan Democratic Senator Gary Peters announced that he will support that extreme MAGA Republican bill called the Lake and Riley Act, an act that would allow ICE officials to go around arresting and detaining immigrants without legal permission if they have allegedly committed theft-related crimes. Now, Lake and Riley became a rallying cry for the MAGA Republican base because she was murdered by an illegal immigrant back in 2022. Tragic story. Her murderer was found guilty in a court of law and will spend the rest of his life in prison without parole. So the law worked. But you know, MAGA Republicans, that's not enough. They always have to focus on the other and make everybody fear the other. Because even though immigrants are far less likely to commit crimes than U.S.-born citizens, we cannot be bothered by those facts. No, you people are silly. We've got some brown people to harass because that's fun, right? Well, judging by Michigan Democratic Senator Gary Peters' actions, I guess it's fun to him or politically expedient to him, I guess. Acting like MAGA is kind of what you do. You don't want to act like a progressive where you actually help people. You want to act like MAGA because you feel like that'll help you politically. Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Hillary Scholten and the new Congresswoman from Michigan, Kristen McDonald-Rivett, I guess doing more MAGA Republican things than doing real progressive things is more fun for them. They were two of the 48 Democrats in the House who ended up supporting the bill. The ACLU says in opposition to this bill, quote, "It's a slippery slope to start with the mandatory prolonged detention of our longtime residents who have been accused of, though perhaps not even charged with, criminal offenses, sometimes decades-old charges," unquote. There's no presumption of innocence, which, you know, kind of makes America America, at least that's what I thought, but trash that aside. Because MAGA Republicans have political games to play. But the bigger question to me is, why the hell are some Michigan Democrats sounding like MAGA Republicans on immigration? Instead of joining MAGA, who has nothing but bad intentions, including mass deportations, which would ruin our states and the nation's economies, perhaps Democrats should start pressing for some real immigration reform bills of their own. I know I'm just spitballing here. I know, crazy me, but that would seem like a good first step, showing that you're trying to separate yourselves from the party that you guys told all of us last fall was a threat to our democracy. Seems like a pretty good idea. I felt that one major failure of this past election was how Democrats were, outside of the abortion rights issue, fighting on Republicans' turf and fighting the issues Republicans, along with their corporate media cohorts, were telling them to fight. Very rarely did you ever see Democrats pushing a narrative. They were always responding to things that Trump was doing and responding to things that MAGA Republicans were doing or saying. Many Democrats failed to fight and failed to out-message how progressive policies and values work out a hell of a lot better than Republican policies. And many Democrats ran as bipartisan warriors, while at the same time they told voters how Trump and the Republican Party was the biggest threat to democracy and this country's institutions. Mixed messages. That sent mixed messages to voters who were told to fear Republican rule, but that in the end, if Republicans win, Democrats will work together with the people who want to destroy this country. Really, there's no big deal. It's all a big game. That's what people heard. That's what people saw. And that's why many of them probably said, voting for Trump, voting for Republicans really doesn't matter. Getting back to Kristen McDonald Rivett, she won an election where Michigan Democrats really didn't do the greatest in 2024. So give Kristen McDonald Rivett her credit and give her credit for her win, because some of her ads in which she spoke in plain English and how she would represent the working class in her district as a congresswoman in the 8th district comprising of Midland, Bay City, Saginaw, and Flint, hey, those ads were effective. But I still had a problem with many of those ads, because rather than highlighting her work in the state Senate, in which she co-sponsored and passed the expanded earned income tax credit from 6 to 30% for working families in Michigan, she didn't even really highlight how she helped develop sentencing guidelines for parents who failed to lock up their guns after their kids used those guns to kill others. And she didn't even talk about how she fought for the expansion of LGBTQ+ rights. No, instead, McDonald Rivett concentrated her message on how she could get Republican voters to back her and how fighting crime, even though crime statistics show drops in crime, how fighting crime was always on the top of her mind. And on top of that, she talked about how she would work with the anti-democratic Republican Party on securing the border, aka going after immigrants. Now, I think McDonald Rivett won her race in part, and this has to be noted, because her Republican opponent, Paul Young, ran a horrible campaign, and she did create some decent ads that went viral. And I even lauded some of those ads on some of the shows last year. But it's hard for Democrats to gain a foothold with working class voters, or to make voters believe that you're willing to make their lives better if you refuse to run as a Democrat. Now, many of you know full well by now how Michigan's Democratic leadership in Lansing botched the lame duck session in their final days of complete power before MAGA Republicans took control of the House. Water affordability, homeless bill of rights, polluter pay, extending statute of limitations for sexual abuse survivors all failed to get any kind of vote. I mean, that was a perfect opportunity for Democrats to show, yes, we may have lost the election and working class voters may not trust us, but here, we are going to pass these bills in our final days in power to show everyone that we are truly the working class party, while MAGA Republicans are doing everything in their power to oppose what we're trying to pass. But that didn't happen. No, instead, Governor Whitmer and the Democratic leadership passed a couple of bills, and one of them was to ensure that data centers for big tech companies like Meta, Google, and Microsoft and others received beautiful, massive tax handouts or tax breaks or corporate welfare, whatever you want to call it. And these data centers, by the way, need to swallow up lots of water to keep everything cool. So the hell with Michigan's environmental goals, I guess. And that's the most maddening of everything, because as we learned during the election, and we keep learning today, big tech bros bankroll Trump, and now they have him serving as a figurehead in office for their benefit. And meanwhile, here in Michigan, the Democratic leadership was doing everything in its power to give these companies, these same people, corporate handouts. That was at the top of their agenda above polluter pay, above water affordability. What the hell's going on here? I mean, what we have seen here is a complete power play from the powerful people, the new robber barons, if you shall, from the tech industry, and Trump and MAGA Republicans are willing to give them whatever they want. Why the hell are Democrats doing the same? And I'm going to let you in on a little secret, everyone. They don't like Democrats, especially progressive Democrats. Coming up after this short break to talk more about big tech running our country and whether or not the media is up to the job to report on it is writer and reporter Jennifer Schulze. All right, so stick around for that. You are listening to LOL.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
Hey, I just wanted to say that it's not a bad idea to escape from politics and the world occasionally. It's really not, because we'd all burn out if we force our nervous systems to operate in overdrive for every single minute for the next 2 to 4 years. So please, please make sure that you have some hobbies, or find a new hobby, or escape with a good movie, binge watch a show, read a book, go out for a walk, play some pickleball, pick up that sport, it's pretty cool, or escape by just watching some sports. Thankfully, we here in Michigan have the Detroit Lions to provide some escapism right now. And for me as a tennis fan, the Australian Open begins in a few days, so I will find some escape in that way too. I'm just saying this because I believe if we don't give ourselves mental and physical respites, we become MAGA-brained. We really do, and we become an unhealthy society, and that's why we've got the arts, that's why we've got sports, and that's why it's okay to step out of the house and simply go on a walkabout. Make sure to take care of yourself in this time. That is of the greatest importance. All right. As I've talked about, Donald Trump is, of course, returning to power here in a few days. And there are a number of reasons as to how or why, which I've discussed a lot. But one main reason that he won and got away with everything is due to the failure, I think, of the corporate media. And another reason, of course, is due to the billionaire tech bro industry that is more than happy to work with and even direct Trump to ensure that their industry and their billionaire class turns even more powerful during his term. Joining me to talk more about this and more is Jennifer Schulze, a longtime Chicago journalist who now writes about journalism and media at the Heartland Signal and also on her Substack called Indistinct Chatter. Jennifer, thanks so much for spending a little time here on Left of Lansing. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Pat. I'm very excited about our chat. Can't wait to hear what topics you want to cover.
Perfect. Well, first, what's the Heartland Signal all about?
Well, it's a website that is connected to the progressive radio station here in Chicago, WCPT. And Heartland Signal is its, I think they call themselves the newsroom for WCPT. Mm-hmm. So they do articles and op-eds, mostly focused, I will say, on the Midwest, but not entirely. I mean, you can't avoid talking about national politics, and national politics obviously impacts so many things. So there's tons of overlap, but the Heartland part of it refers to being focused here in the Midwest. I am a contributor to that website, and I think I started writing there, I don't know, a year and a half ago, just about my thoughts on the media. I have lots of thoughts. There are lots of things to talk about with the media, as you well know, Pat.
I do. You know, I sort of stumbled upon the website because, like you said, there's a great concentration on Midwest politics. And of course, I cover Michigan politics, and there have been some great stories on Michigan politics posted there as well. And so I think that's how I stumbled upon the Heartland Signal. And that's how I started reading some of your columns and following you on Twitter. But now you've moved over to Blue Sky, as have I as well. Are you on Blue Sky exclusively now, or do you still have a presence on Twitter, which, you know, I do not call by the name that Elon Musk wants us to call it?
Well, I agree with you. I call Twitter Twitter and Facebook Facebook. My account on Twitter is still sitting there. I have not used it except to note one thing, I think about a week ago, which just as an aside, I'm sure people have noticed that government agencies, along with many news organizations, have a presence on Twitter, and they have not yet migrated over to any of these other platforms. And one that I am particularly fond of and have followed for years and rely on, frankly, for lots of things is the National Weather Service. And the National Weather Service is not on Blue Sky. And really, it does most of its social media posting exclusively on Twitter. So about a week ago, I just copy-pasted something I'd written on Blue Sky about that to the National Weather Service, like pleading with them, please move over to these other platforms. But otherwise, I completely avoid Twitter. It is, as you well know, and I'm sure many of your listeners do too, a cesspool, and I have no interest in participating in that. So I post almost exclusively on Blue Sky. Up until yesterday, I was a little bit on Threads, and now I'm seriously contemplating going away from Threads because it's part of the Mark Zuckerberg, we don't believe in facts empire. And I have not been on Facebook for years. So, gosh, I'm glad I don't have to worry about that. I would say to anybody that is on Facebook, oh, boy, I don't think it's a tough decision. I don't think you should be there. I don't think you should be helping him make more money, find another way to share your vacation pictures.
You know, though, that's going to lead me to this question. And I get it because I'm not doing as much on Twitter like I used to. I mean, that was where I would go every day. I'd wake up and open up Twitter, and that's where I would do a majority of my commentary on there, except, you know, obviously here on the podcast. I'm doing more now on Blue Sky almost exclusively, but I still do kind of check out Twitter just to see what's there. And like you said, there are still a lot of organizations, still a lot of people that I followed who just haven't moved over yet to Blue Sky. So my question is, do you think it is wise for us to give up the ground at Facebook and at Twitter, or should we be fighting there as well as going over to Blue Sky?
I do appreciate the conundrum. I personally decided that I did not want to be a part of any of that back and forth. I appreciate, though, people who do think there is a place, just like people who think that Democrats and others should go on interview shows on Fox, because if you don't, are they then only hearing, you know, all the propaganda? So I get that. And I think it is a personal decision. I do think it's a mistake for anybody to be exclusively on Twitter. And that's what concerns me, for example, about the National Weather Service. Within a couple of days, I think we can be pretty well assured the National Weather Service will not migrate away from Twitter once Trump is back in the White House. And probably there are some government agencies that are on Blue Sky and on other platforms, but I would expect that that might even change. But it is a personal decision. I'm not one of those kind of people that goes on social media to fight with people. My feeling is I have something to say, and if anybody is interested in hearing it, that's great. If people want to have constructive conversations about it, I'm all for that. A lot of times I'll take things offline with folks, and I've met people, gotten to know them, and interviewed them for future articles that way. But I'm not a rage tweeter and all of that kind of thing. So I think it's a, you know, again, it's a personal choice about really what you want to do. But if you're only on Twitter, if you're only on Facebook, I think that's a big mistake. And I think it's a disservice to all the people who have chosen not to be in those dangerous spaces. And I think they are dangerous spaces. I mean, a lot of people get threats and, you know, a lot of nasty stuff happens on those places. And so far, I don't know what your experience has been, but I've found Blue Sky to be very welcoming and very thoughtful. Although I do notice as it's gotten more popular, there are more trolls and more bots. And, you know, I'm doing the block thing like I hadn't when I first joined, but it still just seems to be a better space for honest conversation.
It is. And that's why I'm doing a majority of my commentary there than I am anywhere else. So, yeah, I agree with you. Jennifer, let's talk more about Elon Musk, if you don't mind. You posted such an insightful, yet scary, but also spot on piece in the Heartland Signal titled The United States of Elon. And you're right about how Musk was pretty much single-handedly able to at least temporarily force a government shutdown last month. And you point out how Trump and the MAGA majority in Congress will pretty much just follow what Elon wants, considering how much money he gave them for their campaign. So I guess here's my question, and it's a question that you posed in your piece. Is the news media prepared to cover this merger of Elon Musk and the billionaire class led by him and Trump and his MAGA Republicans? Do you really think the press is up to the job right now?
First, I want to take a step back because I think everybody needs to get a much better understanding of the media environment overall. Okay. And understand that a full 50% or more of the media, and of course, everybody's got a different definition of what they think media means, but let's just say news and information is right-wing propaganda. Fox News, for example, has the largest audience of any of the cable news outlets. Twitter has more followers than Blue Sky. The right-wing media environment is rich financially and otherwise. It is big and it is growing and it is the dominant voice in America right now. So when we talk about the media, we're really talking about a couple of different things. But the dominant media in America is right-wing media. And I would argue most of what you would hear or see on that is propaganda. It's not news. And frankly, they don't intend it to be news. But it is driving the conversation. It is in lockstep with the Republican Party. It helped elect Donald Trump. So then when we talk about, well, media covering Elon Musk and others, regular media, I struggle with what to call the rest of the media. Is it regular media? Is it legacy media? Is it mainstream media? I'm not really sure, but I'm sure we all agree on what it is. It's like the NBCs and the New York Times and, right, you know, whatever the local TV station is in your viewing area. That's more traditional media. I think the national media has been kind of hit and miss with Elon Musk, just like they have with Mark Zuckerberg and a lot of these other tech bros. Somebody yesterday shared the story from the New York Times just less than a year ago, and the headline was, "Mark Zuckerberg is so done with politics," or something like that. You know, are you kidding me? And, you know, I guess it depends on your definition of politics, right? So that media, again, is, I think, sort of hit and miss with Elon. But I also started to see some of the same patterns when he really jumped into the Trump campaign in July. And after that, I started to notice some of the same patterns the press has with Trump. And that is, Elon says is the headline. Elon Musk says. Elon Musk believes. Elon Musk. So he gets this instant credibility, no matter what he said. You know, for years we've seen Trump says, and it doesn't matter if Trump said something different yesterday and he's going to say something different the day before. The headline, which of course everybody reads headlines more than they do stories, the headline sends a message like this is serious, authoritative, honest, and that kind of thing. And I noticed that that was happening with Elon Musk. Not that it necessarily wasn't happening before, but when he got into politics, the coverage of him jumped over into mainstream coverage off the business pages. And it was very uncritical for the most part. Clearly, that's a problem. So what I was watching just all this unfold and seeing his enormous power to even get Donald Trump to do what he wants. I mean, honestly, I think Elon Musk is probably the most powerful person in the world right now. We see what he's doing in Europe, and he has his finger in everything and is using his social media platform and the press and other people's reluctance to push back too hard on him because nobody wants really to be in his crosshairs, right? But he seems to be influencing the government of the United States in a way I don't know that we've ever seen before. And so I started thinking about it and I was like, oh my God. I mean, I'm worried enough about Trump, but in a way, I'm more worried about Elon Musk because he's, I think, more powerful than Trump. I know Trump, when he's president, will have an army and all of that, but I really do believe Musk is like an earworm in Donald Trump's head. He's like calling the shots on a lot of things. His influence is crazy. You know, if you're some tech writer for the New York Times, you're going to stand up to that? I mean, you know, it's hard. And one person I wanted to talk to about it was a tech reporter who covers Musk. The first thing you have to know about Elon Musk is that he wants attention more than anything. And doesn't that sound like Trump?
Yeah.
But Gil Duran said, you need to understand the motivation of a guy like Elon Musk. He doesn't care what he's saying. I mean, he doesn't want to lose his government contracts. clearly, but he most importantly wants to be the person everyone's paying attention to and talking about and the cool guy. And the press cannot give in to that. And I see a lot of that kind of coverage happening. And I do think that over the years, tech coverage has been also hit and miss. I mean, these guys weren't perceived as such a political threat before. They might have been perceived more as a technological threat. I mean, taking over the world with social media and their tech platforms and the like. But now so many of them are involved in politics, and we really need to start covering them a little bit more aggressively. Is the press up to it? I don't think so.
Okay, that's a little depressing.
I know, it is. It's really depressing.
Well, Jennifer, then are we partially then to blame for allowing Musk to have such a high stature in our culture, not just our politics, that we put people like him on such a high pedestal when he was just viewed as just, you know, this tech genius? And now it's to the point that nobody feels like they can question him?
Well, I'm sure that's part of it. A lot of these guys, and frankly, they're mostly guys, you know, have been treated for years like boy wonders.
Yeah.
So then when you've kind of, that's sort of the understanding, right? How do you then say, oh, but now they're a little bit dangerous? Already with the right-wing propaganda being the dominant media in the country and mainstream media facing all kinds of challenges, including just how far to go to be combative, it's not quite the right word, but to be more aggressive in its coverage, it struggles with that. Obviously, it struggled for years with doing that with Trump. Where do we find the truth? The thing that really bugs me about the mainstream coverage of Musk is just how willing the coverage has been to say the Department of Efficiency. And in the descriptions and headlines and stories and interviews of this committee, commission, advisory group that doesn't exist yet and is by no means a government department and will not be a government department, most likely, but to just automatically give that instant credibility. So I think if you went around the country and said to people, you know, what do you think about this Elon Musk thing? They would right now believe it was an existing department of the U.S. government and that he was already working there and everything was moving along just fine. And part of that is the way that the press talks about it. Instead of saying, you know, like the so-called or the planned, I mean, just being more careful about how you talk about things. But that horse is already out of the barn, I think.
Agreed. You know, if you don't mind, since you've already brought him up, you quoted him in your story and you said it was Gil Durand. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And because you did ask him also, you know, how do you cover Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who are leading,
said, this whole thing about slashing
domestic spending and all that. And he told you enough. I'm just going to quote it here. He said, remember, one of their main goals is to erase the public's ability to distinguish between lies and truth. Journalists must hold the line and refuse to cover liars and lies with naive 20th century objectivity. The rules have changed and journalism must evolve or die. To be clear, it is currently dying. So is journalism, or what we have known as journalism, dying, Jennifer? And if it is, what is then maybe the next step for journalism if it has to move on from this 20th century playbook in a way? And what does that mean for the future of the country if journalism doesn't evolve?
Two comments on that. First of all, I'd say the advertising model, the financial model for mainstream media is what's dead and dying, right? Mm-hmm. Print newspapers relied on advertising in the pages of the newspapers. When that went away, they did not have a successful replacement for it, particularly because they had already started giving away their content for free on social media platforms like Facebook. So you can't give it away for free on Facebook and then say, oh, now we're going to put up a paywall and have people to go for that. And that, the loss of the advertising revenue, is what was the biggest driver in news organizations shrinking, together with the rise of social media. So suddenly, instead of turning on the news in the morning or in the evening or reading your paper or whatever, suddenly you're picking up your phone and you're going through Twitter. And then you're looking at stuff that's on there from Russian bots and the New York Times. Pretty soon, there were other actors that gained more traction, and it definitely damaged mainstream media. Now, I do think that mainstream media can survive this. I think it is going to have to, as Gil said in that interview I did with him, it is going to have to change how it does business. And one of these things, I mean, I went to journalism school a long time ago, but one of the classic things that you learn when you're in journalism school and then you are meant to practice when you're working as a journalist is this notion of getting a comment from this person and then, but this person says that. That has evolved into this notion of both sides. And somebody said it very smartly, I can't remember who exactly, but said there are not two sides to a lie. And when one side of a story is lying, as let's just say Trump is pretty much every time he opens his mouth, and then whoever he's talking about is saying something truthful, treating them the same, weighing them the same, so that the listener, the viewer, the reader goes, well, I'm not sure. Journalists have traditionally not then weighed in and said, Mr. Trump is clearly lying here because these are the facts. They have sort of left it out there for us to decide. And I think what Gil's getting at is that can't work anymore. And you do see mainly more alternative and smaller news organizations taking a different approach where they will very clearly say, basically, this is BS. And here are the facts. But of course, now we live in this fact-free world. So there are people who don't necessarily even believe you when you present them with information. But that doesn't mean journalists shouldn't still do it. So I think the point is to move forward, we have to be more realistic about the information environment that we're living and working in and not be timid about saying when things are bonkers, when things are lies and the like. Like, for example, what about yesterday? I mean, Trump had the 70-minute news conference where he said a bunch of crazy stuff, including, yeah, maybe we will go to war with Panama and Greenland or Denmark to get Greenland. My headline would be about how dangerous and unprecedented this stuff is. The New York Times leading reporter David Sanger does a whole piece on it, but it's sort of like, oh yeah, it's Trump being Trump. And I'm like, if we had been more honest about some of this from the beginning, I don't know, would we be here today? I don't know. But I don't know how we can keep doing the Trump being Trump thing without really telling our audiences, this is serious and dangerous.
But we are going to get the Gulf of America. I mean, come on.
I mean, yeah. And I would say to that, one of the things that Trump does better than anybody, and I think Elon Musk is right up there with him, though, it's a distraction.
Of course.
You know, what we should be talking about are his nominees to run the Defense Department and the like, right? And he's very good at, there'll be 24 hours of Gulf of America stories.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the things that are really going to impact us, well, we're distracted from that because that's over here. And, you know, what crazy thing did he say today? Figuring out how to do that, the mainstream media has not done it.
Well, and not to interrupt you, but you kind of bring this up in your piece. I mean, that's the whole flooding the zone strategy, right?
Right. And the press has not figured out, because here's another thing that drives news media. Not that this will be surprising to anyone, but what's new is sometimes given more attention by news organizations and journalists themselves than what's important. And Trump has something new every time he opens his mouth. Yesterday, he had about 400 things that were new. And figuring out how to weigh that as opposed to just spewing it all out there is something that the news media is very, very bad at. And frankly, Americans, like you and I probably spend a lot of time paying attention to the news, right? And know what's going on pretty much all through the day. Most people don't live like that, right? They might catch a newscast a couple times a week, might. Nobody reads a newspaper anymore. Most people get their news from social media. But when we say they get their news from social media, is it news? Is it, you know, a Russian bot telling them that something that is very much not true? And so people catch snatches of things. They catch mood or trends, but very limited. It's a huge problem. Trump's flooding the zone, how people take in the information, how the media prioritizes what happens. I'm not surprised people can't make much sense of it. I'm also not surprised that so many people who said they voted for Trump did not really understand his policies or his plans, because I'm not sure you could in this media environment unless you made it your mission. And who's going to do that unless they're, you know, like you and me?
We only have a couple moments left. And I love, Jennifer, that you took some time to talk with us here this week. But if I can just bring up this one point, and maybe it's something you and I think we agree on, but maybe not 100%. And so it's something that you've been sharing on your Blue Sky account. And it's that many are upset. You've already brought it up here about Mark Zuckerberg announcing that he's going to be getting rid of his fact checkers on Facebook and instead he's going to follow Musk's Twitter example, I think, of community notes. Mm-hmm. But I have to say this, that I'm not as fired up about that part because misinformation has always been on social media. And it's not like as we've just been talking about here, it's not like the legacy media fact checkers always got everything right as well. I mean, I can remember even during the Obama years when Rachel Maddow on MSNBC would regularly attack the Washington Post and other legacy media fact checkers for, in her opinion, getting it wrong. And that's, she would spend a lot of segments talking about that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is when it comes to that, there never really was a perfect fact checking system in the first place, was there?
No, honestly, I'm not sure the fact checking system is the biggest issue with what's going on with Zuckerberg. I think from what I've been reading, like I said, I'm not on Facebook, but what I've been reading today about people who have worked there and have been part of the fact-checking apparatus, none of these posts were ever taken down, but they were flagged. And if you wanted to, you could click on something and go get the information, actual credible information about whatever was being said in a questionable post. The difference going forward is going to be that will be non-existent and it will be an open sewer like Twitter. That, I think, is something we should all be concerned about when so many people are using those platforms as their sole news source. But the real issue, I think, with Zuckerberg is that he's coddling up to Trump by basically copying Trump's misleading talk about free expression and free speech. Please, Trump is not interested in free expression and free speech. I'm quite confident he doesn't know what the First Amendment says. This is a man who regularly talks about locking up journalists, taking away their licenses and things like that. So the whole free speech thing is just, it's whatever I say, you need to let people hear that. But really, it's about more authoritarian stuff that I think than not. But the Zuckerberg stuff is he's basically setting aside pretty well-known principles that he's espoused for years, I think, all because he wants power and access to Trump. I'm not so sure I think he's necessarily afraid of him. Maybe he is. Trump did threaten to put Zuckerberg in jail, so that could be concerning, surely. But I think the thing we really should be concerned about is this is a power play, like with Musk and like with a lot of these other tech guys. Even Tim Cook of Apple, who's not donated to an inauguration ever before, wrote $1 million check from his personal checkbook to Donald Trump. Are they doing that because they really like Donald Trump? No, they're doing it because they want their piece of the pie too. And they know that they need to basically pay him off to be connected to that. So I think the fact-checking thing at Facebook is a part of a bigger issue with Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Jennifer Schulze, the longtime Chicago journalist who now writes about journalism and media at the Heartland Signal, where you can read her piece that we've been talking about here this week titled Welcome to the United States of Elon. And you can also read more of her writings on her Substack called Indistinct Chatter. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for your time. I will link to your article. I will link to your page on the Heartland Signal and also your Substack. Please keep up the awesome work that you're doing. And hey, I'd love to have you on again sometime in the future, if you wouldn't mind.
I would love to come back and chat. There's always plenty to talk about, right, Pat?
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
You know, that's a terrific way to start another year of The Left of Lansing with a terrific guest like Jennifer Schulze. She gave some really great insights and points on the state of media and social media, and especially the billionaire tech bros who are stifling free speech so that way they can cozy up to Trump and MAGA Republicans. If you don't mind, I'd like to offer up some extra thoughts of my own or attachments to some points Jennifer made as part of this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. Near the end of our talk there, you heard us discuss Mark Zuckerberg's plans to gut Facebook's fact checkers in favor of some kind of community notes thing that Elon Musk installed at Twitter. And I liked how Ms. Schulze described how this will lead Facebook becoming an open sewer like Twitter is right now. Because in the past, you'd be able on Facebook to at least flag a blatant lie and others could look up the truth. Now that won't even be an option. But we both agreed that there is really no perfect system of fact-checking, and if memory serves me correctly, since it wasn't that long ago, it seems that many liberals and progressives had tons of criticisms as to how Trump and Harris were being covered differently by legacy media. And for many of us, we've been critical for a long time on how the legacy media so-called fact-checked progressive policies or agendas, right? I mean, I'm not wrong about that. But what Zuckerberg really announced this week, and as Jennifer Schulze rightly highlighted, it's that Zuckerberg is coddling up to Trump by declaring himself to being some kind of a free speech warrior when the opposite will happen with these Facebook changes. Believe me, there will be no freedom of speech for one side. And again, this is all about joining the billionaire class, in particular the toxic masculinity billionaire tech bro class, and Zuckerberg's letting Trump, Musk, and others know that he has always, always been on their side. Always. And perhaps this is a way to get Trump to maybe reverse his plans on allowing TikTok to remain here in America. I mean, it's always better to trample all over the First Amendment in order to defeat your competition, right? These billionaire Silicon Valley tech bros are the new robber barons, and they've got both political parties to thank for their efforts on ensuring that they became this wealthy and this powerful. The only difference now is that the Democrats did not get rewarded for their coddling of the tech bros through the years. Nope, MAGA Republicanism is now getting rewarded. If you can, I'd just like to share a quote to you from Jared Yates Sexton. He has a Substack called Dispatches from a Collapsing State, and he also hosts the Muckrake political podcast. And if you recall, he was a guest here last year, and he's been spending a huge chunk of time covering the tech bro billionaire class. And this is what he had to say of Zuckerberg's statement this week in a piece that he wrote. And I'm just going to quote here, if you don't mind. He says, "Here, and this is the same case as watching Jeff Bezos, Apple, and other tech oligarchs just blatantly handing Trump millions of dollars, is an example of how this oligarchical class system works. Within the upper ranks, there is a solidarity among the wealth class. They're fighting for the same things: deregulation, continued consolidation of resources and wealth, the destruction of the social safety net, the total takeover of representative government and the economy, and they have incredible class solidarity." He's right. We are in the new robber baron age here, everyone, and we're partially to blame for it. And we can fight it. We can fight against the corruption, and we can fight the sinister system that allowed all of this to happen. And we can do that thanks to different platforms and avenues, such as progressive podcasts like Left of Lansing. And that's why it's important to support and share these shows with as many people as you can, because like Jennifer said, right-wing media enjoys strong financial backing. Most of us on the progressive side do not. We rely on you. So please subscribe, like, and give 5-star reviews of strong progressive voices and strong progressive programming like this one. And one more thing, Michigan Democrats and progressive activists out there, legacy media is certainly one way to reach as many people as you can at once. And I highlight the work of many fine reporters in Lansing on this show. But legacy media is foundering. In many ways, we have news deserts happening all across the state and all across the country. There are still, though, other and more effective ways on networking and disseminating your message. And one of those ways is appearing right here on progressive shows such as this one and a few other awesome shows that we've got here in Michigan. Then you aren't beholden to the tech bros on Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram, and also Threads. And, you know, those guys will just find ways to stifle our speech. They're already doing it, and they're already shadow banning us. Or they just silence us all together on their platforms. Let this be a way to bypass the MAGA billionaire class, and let this become a way for us to talk directly to each other and to the people. Or, you know what, we could just keep doing what we're doing, and maybe the billionaire class will just open up their arms to us eventually. But deep down inside, I know that You know better.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
And that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Jennifer Schulze of the Heartland Signal for being a wonderful guest this week. And please check out her Substack called Indistinct Chatter. Next week, I'm hoping to have one of the more strong progressive Democrats in Lansing on the show. I'm not going to say their name just yet. I'm going to withhold that because it's not written in stone yet. But they have been here before, and I hope they can make it next week. Remember, you can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. And like I said earlier, don't forget to just let your mind wander a little bit from time to time. Don't just get fixated on politics and news. I don't think that's healthy for anyone. So once in a while, just escape. No Detroit Lions football this weekend since they're sitting back and relaxing during this wild card round weekend. So good for them. But if you are looking for some entertainment, looking for a show to watch, perhaps, may I recommend Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. I've enjoyed the first three seasons, and we're currently in the middle of watching season four, and I have to tell you, it's worth your time because those three really work well together. Okay, until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.